Welcome to Your Life Reset, a Virta Health podcast where bold stories meet breakthrough ideas. From massive weight loss wins to exploring the latest research, discover what's possible when science meets real life.
Hey there, listeners. It's Teresa Link, and this is Your Life Reset. These days, we're all trying to cut back on sugar, and for good reason. But what's the best way to do it? From sodas to snacks, a whole new wave of zero sugar products are available. And with so many new sweeteners lining the shelves, it's harder than ever to know what's what, let alone which one goes in your cart. In this episode, I sit down with Franziska Spritzler, registered dietitian and medical science liaison at Keto Mojo, to break down the sweet truth. How do the classics like aspartame and sucralose stack up against newcomers like monk fruit and allulose? And what does the science really say about their impact on cravings, health, and your metabolism? And most importantly, if you're trying to cut back on sugar, are these sweeteners your best ally or just another trap to keep you hooked? Let's dive in. All right. Well, welcome back, Franziska. Thanks for joining me again today.
Thank you so much for inviting me back, Teresa. I'm thrilled to be here.
Yeah. I had you last time we were on the podcast together. We were talking about some of the low carb benefits for health and beauty. So basically, you know, we chatted about how eating a low carb diet can help you stay young forever.
That's right? The idea. Yeah,
that's the idea. Yeah, not entirely. But yes, we did talk about a lot of the health and beauty and anti-inflammatory types of characteristics of choosing low carb foods. We're going to tackle the sweetness without the sugar today, and it's everybody's favorite, right? Everybody has an expert opinion on sugar substitutes, so I want to hear from our expert today and really kind of try to cut through all of that noise. So let's just start with the basics here. You know, what are sugar substitutes, and how do they differ from real sugar?
Okay, so sugar substitutes are also called non-nutritive sweeteners, and non-nutritive sweeteners means they provide sweetness without providing any calories or very few calories. They're basically not metabolized for energy in the body, and they can be called sugar substitutes or non-nutritive sweeteners, artificial sweeteners, alternative sweeteners. There's a lot of different names for them, but that's basically what they mean. A nutritive sweetener is sugar and other forms of sweeteners that do have calories and provide energy that the body uses. So the chemical term for sugar is sucrose, and that's one molecule of glucose and one molecule of fructose. And when you eat sugar, it is broken down into those two different molecules in the body, and those can be metabolized and used for energy in a way that sugar substitutes cannot. So that's the main difference between sugars and sugar substitutes.
Okay. It's actually quite simple. So our sugars, and there's a bunch of them, right? Different names, malt syrup, barley syrup, honey, agave, regular sugar, you know, and they provide us with calories, and the body uses those calories for energy. And then we have other sweeteners. We'll get into a whole bunch of those. Do not provide calories, so non-nutritive. Okay. And they could go under the name, some of them are artificial sweeteners, some of them are you know, sugar alternatives, natural sugar alternatives, but at the end of the day, those do not provide any calories, so
or very few, some of them very few.
All right, so now that we know kind of that basic understanding of the difference between sugar and non-nutritive sweeteners, can you explain some of the different types of non-nutritive sweeteners or sugar substitutes that are available on the market today?
Absolutely. So I think people like to think of sweeteners as either natural or artificial. It's a little more complex than that, but I will go through like the three broad categories of sweeteners and talk about maybe the most common ones in each group. So the first one is natural sweeteners, and that would be any sweetener that comes from a plant. And the most common ones would be stevia and monk fruit extract. And even though these are natural, according to the FDA, they're natural, they're actually highly processed by the time they actually make it into a sweetener form that people use. And they're also very sweet. They are considered high intensity sweeteners because they're about 200 or 300 times as sweet as the same amount of table sugar. So even though they're natural, they're highly processed and extremely sweet. So that's the first category.
Okay.
Any questions about those? That's pretty simple, right? The natural ones. I mean, they're natural, but they're a little processed. Okay. And then the next one we're going to call natural sweeteners that are produced artificially.
Okay.
And so those, there's kind of two groups of those. And I'll start with sugar alcohols. And the sugar alcohols are neither sugar nor alcohol in the sense that most people think of them. It's, again, their chemical structure. But the most common ones would be erythritol and xylitol that are typically used. And these are found in nature, but in very, very small amounts in some fruits and vegetables. But the way that we use them commercially are they're taken from other sources that actually don't contain either erythritol or xylitol. So for instance, erythritol is produced from corn starch or another type of starch. And xylitol is produced from corn cobs most of the time. Since we're using the corn for so many things in the US, why not use the corn cobs for something as well? And sometimes birch, but mainly it's corn cobs. But these are enzymatically or otherwise chemically treated in order to produce those two sugar alcohols. And sugar alcohols are one of these natural sweeteners that are artificially produced. The other one is allulose, which has been getting a lot of talk in nutrition, low-carb circles, keto circles
in recent
years. Very, very popular sweetener. This one is not a sugar alcohol. It's actually a sugar, but it's a rare sugar because it occurs very, very infrequently in nature in very tiny amounts in foods. But it's actually an isomer of fructose. That's that one part of sucrose that I talked about, glucose and fructose. And the way that allulose is made commercially is they take corn, again, corn starch, and get fructose from it and convert that into allulose by just changing it, because it's the isomer. They change it so that it's no longer metabolized and absorbed for energy. So that's allulose.
Okay.
So that's how it differs. But basically the end result is that none of these provide any calories to the body, or very few. And these are not high intensity. They're about as sweet as sugar. Actually, allulose and erythritol are only about 70% as sweet as sugar. And xylitol is about equal in sweetness to sugar. So those are a little more complex because they start off with natural, but you're not going to be able to find them in nature and use them the way that you would with the natural sweeteners. And the last one is artificial sweeteners.
This is the one that most of us have some familiarity with, but
yes, these are the ones that have been around the longest. These are the ones that are not found in nature. They're 100% manufactured in a laboratory. And the most common ones that are in use today are aspartame, sucralose, and saccharin. Although saccharin is a little less common these days, ever since the other two were introduced. But just for people who use little packets, saccharin is sweet and low in the little pink packets, and equal. And that would be aspartame. That's the blue packets, and then sucralose, the little blue ones, and then the little yellow ones are Splenda, and that's sucralose. And these are also high intensity sweeteners, where they're about 200 to 600 times as sweet as an equal amount of sugar. And one important thing to know if you are using those packets is that even though the sweeteners themselves don't contain any carbohydrates, they are packaged with maltodextrin, which is a rapidly digesting carbohydrate, almost a gram per each one. So that's a gram of carbs. So if you're using these packets thinking that you're not getting any carbs, you're actually getting almost a full carb with each packet in any one of those three. So just something to be aware of.
Helps prevent with some clumping. Of the kinking, right?
Yeah.
The clumping. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Also in some of the stevia packets too, I believe Truvia is one brand. Mm-hmm. I'm sure many more, any of those, not just the artificial ones, but your stevia, one of the natural ones. I think I've seen some brands that have more than 2 grams of maltodextrin in a packet, which is
That's
almost defeats the purpose right there.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So. That's the thing. Reading the labels to see, and it's usually the little packets, often like the larger containers don't have them. It's mainly for clumping in those little packets. But yeah.
Okay.
It can be in any of those sweeteners that are granulated can have it.
Okay. But then you have the liquid versions of some,
yes.
You know, like the liquid monk fruit or the liquid sucralose that right. I've seen. And those seem to be handy because mm-hmm. they can provide that sweetness, but you're not getting that maltodextrin
exactly
like you would in the granulated version.
Exactly. I'm a big okay. fan of liquid sweeteners, just spoiler alert. I think the liquid ones are
I am
great.
Too.
Yeah. Great.
Okay. Well, we'll talk about those. We'll kind of break it down in a little while as well. All right, Franziska, now that we know what these different types of sweeteners are, kind of how they're processed, and the fact that really none of them are truly natural, most made from corn, not a problem, but you know, nobody's judging any of this. It's just, you know, some of them, the word natural is not exactly something that is, what am I trying to say? It's not a regulated term.
It's not regulated. Yes.
You kind of throw it around with however you want, right? But right. When you say natural on a product, a lot of people are more likely to purchase it, certainly. Yep. But we've talked about these different types of non-nutritive sweeteners. So lots and lots of different ones that we can choose from on the market. I'm curious to hear, as we're looking to try and make some decisions, there's a lot of health debate behind all this. And there has been for decades, especially with the artificial sweeteners, right? But even with some of the others, the newer kids on the block, or the ones that have been around maybe for the past decade, you know, decade and a half or so. So with these debates around health, with the different sweeteners, some say that they are, you know, perfectly safe. Others claim that they'll mess with your gut. They'll increase your cravings to sugar, that they're associated with type 2 diabetes or can even raise your risk of cancer. You know, so you tell us what does the science actually say?
Okay. Well, there's a lot of conflicting science. I understand why people are confused and don't really know which science to believe. I will say that a lot of the science is not very strong for any of these sweeteners. A lot of it is observational data where people are reporting the amount of sweetener that they're consuming either as a beverage, you know, like a Diet Coke, or if they're putting like sucralose or something in their coffee. And then, you know, researchers make correlations to whether they develop disease or something, diabetes, as you said, in the future. And this is just very weak science. We don't know if people are actually consuming that amount every single day. We also don't know what the rest of their diet looks like, which is huge. That's one thing that none of these studies take into consideration. So I think we need to be very careful when we look at those, and also animal studies. I know that many years ago, saccharin was banned because it was said to cause bladder cancer in rats, but they were giving such huge doses and it was never found in humans when they studied later. So they took that that warning off the label. And there has been some talk about cancer. I think the World Health Organization a couple years ago wanted to classify aspartame as being possibly carcinogenic, and they did briefly, and then they did another review and came back and said there's not enough evidence. So with a lot of these sweeteners, there's just not enough evidence to really make those claims, and a lot of it is based on either observational data or preclinical data in animals or just like in vitro tests. Okay, but that being said, there are some clinical trials that we can look at, and you mentioned gut health. Mm-hmm. And the microbiome is a huge topic, and how sweeteners affect the microbiome is still being studied. But right now we have some conflicting evidence on some of the sweeteners, mainly the artificial sweeteners. Sucralose and saccharin have been shown in some studies to cause negative effects on the gut microbiome, even in ways that end up affecting like glucose tolerance and insulin response afterwards. I will say that almost always that's in response to an oral glucose tolerance test. So again, it's not looking at it in the context of somebody who's eating like a ketogenic diet or a low carb diet. We don't know. And then there also have been some studies, clinical trials that haven't shown any effect from those sweeteners. So I think it is very individual and that we all have very unique guts and microbiome. Nobody's is the same as another. Even twins have different ones. And I think that it's so individual that they find in some of these studies that people do respond with changes in their microbiome or changes in their glucose tolerance or insulin levels, and others don't. So again, it's the whole diet and just the different sweeteners, the amounts of sweeteners, and just the bioindividuality of people and the differences in their gut microbiome. So I think when it comes to that, there's a lot more research to be done before we can say whether sweeteners are bad for the microbiome across the board. Yeah.
Well, and you also mentioned something else. You have to look at the diet the person's eating. So we know that if you are in nutritional ketosis, the way that your gut receives that fuel is very different than if you are eating a diet that contains more carbohydrates. So the rules change, right? So we could do the world's best clinical trial. And if it's taken into the context of someone who is eating carbohydrates, it might have a completely different impact for someone who's following, let's say, a ketogenic diet. And then we still have to, you still have to go back and say, well, again, it depends on the context. And, you know, I would imagine we might be hard pressed to have very, very large clinical studies on one type of, you know, let's just say sucralose on the gut for a huge group of people eating carbs and a huge group of people not eating carbs. That just seems like a lot, that probably won't happen. So what I'm hearing from you is you got to think about the context and the individuality and that, again, looking at how is this an association? And is this, you know, animal studies, that sort of thing. There's lots of different things at play. All right. So we have talked about gut health quite a bit, the science and also the individuality, right? Let's talk about cravings.
Okay, so cravings, believe it or not, is something that they don't usually study too much in these clinical trials. They don't really look at those. They look at hunger and if people are reporting more hunger when consuming these sweeteners versus not. And guess what? The science is inconsistent there as well. In some studies, people do report being hungrier after having, and it's mainly, again, these artificial sweeteners that they say can cause hunger. And other people say they actually feel less hungry. I will say in clinical practice that I have seen both. I have seen people who say, when I drink a Diet Coke, I know that I'm going to be hungrier later on and I'm going to be craving sweets. And other people who say, oh no, it satisfies my craving and I'm not hungry. So again, I think it's so individual. And this is something that hasn't been studied that much. And again, that's so subjective for people to say, you know, whether they have cravings or not. And I, again, have to go back to what else are you eating with that Diet Coke or whatever you're drinking. So that can also have an effect on your satiety and your cravings as well. So, and that's usually not done. Very few, if any, of these studies have been done in people on low-carb diets. They don't really look at the rest of the diet. They're just looking at that one item in the diet. And that's impossible to really make any strong conclusions when you do it that way.
What about overall metabolic health? You know, what is the science telling us about that when it comes to any of these types of non-nutritive sweeteners?
Here again, those results are kind of all over the place. A lot of people that are put on like a clinical trial where they're randomized to consume, let's say, Diet Coke versus water for a year, the people who are consuming Diet Coke end up having improvements in blood pressure and losing weight and a lot of other things. I will say, I don't think it's really a big sticking point, but many of these are sponsored by, you know, the beverage associations, the people who make the soft drinks. But these are still randomized clinical trials that are being done. And we say that, you know, every study usually is funded by somebody who has some kind of an interest. But overall, it seems that there's no way to really ascribe poor metabolic outcomes to any of these sweeteners. At least we're not seeing it in the science. It's usually, you know, very short term, as I said, like the changes in gut health that can maybe affect blood glucose and insulin levels in a very short period of time. Or there's just no, you know, it's just neutral results where it's like they nothing. So there, you really can't, at least at this point, I have not seen any convincing evidence that these sweeteners are unhealthy, other than looking at those observational data where they say people who consume more of them tend to be more overweight, develop diabetes, develop heart disease.
Right. And to someone listening, you know, to that, it's a very powerful thing to hear, tend to, right? But you might also, if you look at it from the other angle, perhaps more people who have type 2 diabetes or who are obese or overweight are consuming more of these sugar-free products or sugar-free sweeteners because they are wanting to keep their blood sugar lower or they are wanting to lose weight. So it's not necessarily that one is causing the other, it's that they're happening in tandem. Yep. And so it's a very tricky thing to say it's associated with type 2 diabetes and obesity or poor metabolic health, when maybe it's because you have type 2 diabetes or obesity or poor metabolic health, you're consuming some of these or more of these to try to help you with that condition. But we often don't think of it from that perspective either. So
yeah, no, that's a great point. Yeah.
Okay. I want to ask you about some hot topics that have been in the last couple of years, been difficult to kind of address some of these claims. And they are around two very popular sugar alcohols. So xylitol and erythritol. Talk to us about some of what's going on here in these debate circles. And is there anything that we should be concerned about with these particular sweeteners?
Okay. Thank you for asking, because this is a question that I get a lot from people, particularly about erythritol, but also about xylitol. So a couple of years ago, some researchers from the Cleveland Clinic published a study showing that where they had looked at data from people who were undergoing or about to undergo like a cardiac workup for potential cardiac issues. So a lot of these people were overweight or had high blood pressure or other issues. But they looked at data from a few different cohorts. It ended up being almost like 4,000 altogether. And they looked at the circulating levels of both erythritol and xylitol in their blood. And then they looked years later to see how many of those people had either had a stroke or a heart attack. And it turned out that the people with the highest levels of erythritol or xylitol in their blood had the greatest incidence of heart attack or stroke. But one thing to keep in mind is that our bodies make those two sugar alcohols as metabolites when they metabolize food. So this is long before erythritol or xylitol were used commonly in foods or even available to be used. So that was endogenous production of erythritol. And that was just a correlation again. Maybe these people just had poor metabolic health, and poor metabolic health, one of the markers is having higher levels of erythritol and xylitol. So that was all, again, observational. But then they decided to actually do a very small pilot trial of both erythritol and xylitol. So in each of those trials, they gave each participant, there were only 10 in each trial, they gave them 30 grams of either erythritol or xylitol mixed in water. They had them drink it very quickly on an empty stomach. And then they measured they looked at their platelets before and after consuming this beverage, 30 minutes after. And the platelets were found to be more reactive, meaning they're more likely to clot. So the researchers said that the results of these, in conjunction with this observational data from people who had higher levels of erythritol and xylitol in their blood, that meant that these people, these two sweeteners could potentially be harmful for people's cardiovascular health and could increase their risk of stroke or heart attack. So just a couple of things to keep in mind is that these were very small studies in only 10 people. They were 10 healthy people in each study. I don't know if they were the same 10, but they were 10. And this is a lot of sugar substitute to be consuming all at once. 30 grams at once of either erythritol or xylitol would typically cause some gastrointestinal discomfort. Usually people consume about 10 grams at a time, perhaps maybe 30 grams over the course of a day, but not 30 grams all at once. And also these sweeteners are used to in baking or in making ice cream rather than just on an empty stomach in water all by itself.
Right.
So
right.
All of those things can affect the results. And the final thing is that there have been previous studies where people consumed erythritol and xylitol, and they didn't have any kind of adverse effects, cardiovascularly or otherwise. And there was one about 10 years ago, 2014, where people for 1 month consumed 36 grams of erythritol, but it was broken up into 12 grams three times a day in water or in an orange flavored beverage, I think. And they measured their endothelial function, so the health of their blood vessels, and also they looked at their ability to dilate blood vessels, and those improved after this intervention with the erythritol. So they actually had improvement in factors that would increase the risk of stroke and heart attack.
Okay.
So what does that say? Well, this was also a small study. I think it had 24 people. But again, we have conflicting results, and they're small studies. And in the first one, I'm not here to say erythritol and xylitol are 100% safe, but I'm saying that we can't say, oh, everyone has to stop consuming erythritol and xylitol now because of this study. I think if people have a strong likelihood or like a lot of risk factors for a stroke and they tend to have blood that clots, perhaps think about using another sweetener. But for the rest of us, I'm sure you want to ask me questions and I've been going on and on. For the rest of us, I really do think that having small amounts and using them in real world settings rather than the way that they were given in this trial would probably be safe and okay.
Yes. It, similarly to the saccharin trial, right? Mm-hmm. We're giving high doses that are just not going to occur probably not happening in normal everyday life. Right. At the same time, it's very difficult to control things if it's based on the way a person might eat in an everyday, you know, life. Maybe a cookie that has some erythritol in it or some xylitol mm-hmm. in it, maybe even 30 grams, which would be an awful lot in one cookie.
Absolutely.
But would the effect be the same as if it was combined with, let's say, peanut butter and eggs and a few other things versus water? You know, all of it consumed at once for how long, more people, right? So I love what you said about, you know, we can't completely take it off the table that they are 100% safe. In fact, I don't think we could claim that about anything, but that generally there's also not enough to say that these are not safe based on this evidence. So thank you so much for breaking that down. That's been quite a hot topic, and I think a tough one for people to unpack, especially in the low carb community where there's so much love for erythritol. I think more so than xylitol. Xylitol tends to be a little gassier for a lot of people, but erythritol being so easily digested for a lot of folks, and one that they often find to be a very great way to add some variety and sweetness to their choices. I think would be happy to hear that perhaps we don't have to completely take them off the table.
Yeah, exactly. And it's people's choice. That's what I also say. If you don't feel comfortable, absolutely use another sweetener or go completely sweetener free or whatever you like to do. But for most people who come to me with concerns, I tell them I'm continuing to use it. And I feel okay about it. I've been using it for a long time and haven't had any issues. And we all just have to do what's best for us.
Absolutely. All right. Well, so let's kind of switch gears a little bit and talk about, you know, there's always been sugar-free or reduced sugar, you know, products available, but now they are everywhere. And a lot of them are zero sugar, right? So with these zero sugar products everywhere lining the shelves, you know, that can be a very confusing term, especially when you're trying to reduce sugar. So you'll break it down for us, you know, what categorizes these as zero sugar and what maybe makes them kind of confusing? Are they, Are they a good tool for us? Are they something you might recommend?
Okay, so zero sugar typically means zero added sugar, so zero added sucrose. But it can still have naturally occurring sugars in them. So you could actually say, you know, like a great big orange is zero sugar because there's zero added sugar, but there's a lot of natural sugar. Same thing goes for yogurt. Yogurt has some naturally occurring sugar in it. But then there's the zero sugar yogurts that are sweetened with artificial sweetener. Is that okay? Well, I think it depends on the person. I personally, with yogurt or anything like that, I like to buy plain yogurt because I think it is good for us to get used to the taste of foods that are unsweetened. And then if we want to sweeten them from time to time, we can add the sweetener of our choice in the amount that we want. So that's where I am with like a yogurt and that sort of thing, where you can sweeten it yourself. I will say that certain zero sugar things can be okay in some instances, like for electrolyte repletion. You know, it's much better, I think, to have a zero sugar Powerade than a sugar filled Powerade. the same thing goes, I think, for like energy bars. Generally, I like whole foods. And if you can do whole foods, that's great. But if you need to grab a bar or take a bar with you, having a zero sugar one that contains the sugar that they does contain is like an erythritol or stevia or something like that is much better than just kind of taking your chances with what you might find there that could be loaded with sugar, high fructose corn syrup, and all kinds of sweeteners that we know are metabolically unhealthy. So I think generally going for whole foods and trying to avoid these no sugar or zero sugar items is good, but having them occasionally makes sense. The other thing I was going to say is if somebody can't swallow well, they're recuperating, let's say from dental surgery or something, and they want to drink shakes, some of the pre-made shakes, if they don't have the energy to put them together themselves, that contain sweeteners can be a good idea.
Excellent. So, I had a conversation with someone from our research team about a year ago talking about ultra processed foods and that whole debate. And there was a lot into that as well in terms of, you know, you don't have to completely say no to them, and they're not good, they're not bad. There's a lot of room in the middle. There's a lot of opportunity to, well, let's choose whole foods whenever we can, but sometimes it's okay to grab these every once in a while. And if so, what should we look for, right? So there's no single black and white answer, just like pretty much anything we've learned about sweeteners today as well. Well, Franziska, thank you so much for providing us with all of your insight today, all of your research-backed information. At the end of the day, for someone trying to reduce sugar, from your expert opinion, do you think sugar substitutes are a good idea?
Okay, I'm going to say yes, but I'm going to qualify that. For most people, they are a good idea if you're trying to reduce sugar. The people that I would say might not be a good idea are those who have true sugar addiction or identify as having a sugar addiction, where anything tasting sweet might drive them to continue eating that food or even drive them to start eating carbohydrates and other sweets that actually contain sugar again, because this happens. I feel very fortunate that I don't have that. I can have a little bite of a sugar-free cookie or something and be fine. But for some people, that really lights up their brain the same way that having sugar would. Yeah. So for those people, and this is something you have to test out for yourself, unfortunately, you won't know. And you might say, oh, you know, I can have this sugar substitute. It doesn't trigger those cravings in me. But if it does, I would say then you just want to avoid those foods and live a completely sweet-free life. And that's okay too. We don't need these. You know, it's kind of like alcohol, where some people really have to give it up altogether and others can have small amounts occasionally. It really is very individual.
Yeah. And it might depend on the season of life as well. I know that if I'm in a season of life where am more anxious, have more stress, I am actually more prone to having higher sweets cravings, higher carb cravings, and need to be a bit more careful with the amount of these sugar substitutes, non-nutritive sweeteners that I'm using, because it might trigger more of that during some of those higher risk periods of life versus, you know, so if I know, oh, the holidays are coming up and I always have it's really stressful time of year, you know, it might actually be a better strategy for me to focus more on savory foods And because that's going to help me throughout that season, maybe other times of year when it's a little bit more mentally flexible or not quite as much stress or anxiety going on, there might be a little bit more tolerance for me able to handle more of those sugar substitutes or non-nutritive sweeteners and not have that same level of cravings. And again, it's very personal. It's something I just have to continue to keep tabs on throughout life. And I think if we can, you know, as you said, look at it at a personal level, look at what the science says, which is very unclear in most cases. What are your personal, you know, what are your preferences and what really works for you? That's the most important thing. So that's what I'm hearing.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. We're going to end things with taking you to the hot seat. So Franziska, I want to hear just rapid fire. Don't think too hard about it, but without fail, what is always, always on your grocery list?
How many things can I mention? Just one?
Let's go with three tops.
Okay. Three. Eggs, Greek yogurt, avocado. Always. Oh. Every single week.
Yep. Always. Okay. Excellent. Okay. Number two. Do you find some of those zero sugar snacks to be helpful from time to time?
Yes, I personally do. As I said, I can have a little bit and it doesn't set off cravings for me. Also, I did want to say one sugar-free or zero sugar snack is actually very good, and that's sugar-free beef jerky, because beef jerky is typically loaded with sugar and a lot of people don't realize that. So get the zero sugar beef jerky. You can even find it at the airport. It's great.
Now, you mentioned being a fan of some of the liquid sweeteners. So what's your go-to kind of non-nutritive sweetener when you do use them?
Okay. So the liquid one is definitely stevia. And I understand that some people find it has an aftertaste. I really like it. And I like it so sweet that I only need a little bit. So I would say stevia.
That's the nice thing too. They're so compact. You know, you just need a tiny little bit and you don't have to open up all those messy packets and you don't get the maltodextrin. So, so something that people can kind of try out for themselves. Mm-hmm. All right. Final question. Expert opinion: are non-nutritive sweeteners better than sugar?
This one I can say categorically, yes, they are better than sugar. We know what sugar does metabolically, how it raises blood glucose and insulin levels. It provides only, I think I wanted to say about non-nutritive sweeteners versus nutritive. Nutritive sounds like they're nutritious, but it's just providing energy. They're not really providing any nutrients that we need aside from carbohydrate, which we don't need. So I would say they're just empty calories, and you should save your calories for nourishing food. And that's why I like non-nutritive sweeteners a lot better.
All right. Excellent. Well, Franziska, you have been so helpful today for very clearly and expertly breaking down the science and breaking down a lot of these claims, talking to us about all of these different classes of non-nutritive sweeteners, sugar alternatives. There's so many out there. There's no way we could list every single one of them. Thank you again so much for joining us. It was a pleasure to have you back. And I look forward to the next conversation that we have in the future.
So do I. Thank you so much. I loved it. Thanks for that.
If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe and leave us a review on Apple or Spotify. And if you'd like to regain control of your metabolic health and feel like yourself again, check us out at virta.com. That's VIRTA.com. Your Life Reset is for informational purposes only and shouldn't be considered a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Contact your provider if you suspect you have a medical problem. I'll chat with you all again soon. Until then, stay inspired, my friends.